Welcome to the Closer and Closer podcast, a podcast about expanding your creative capacity. Each week, we interview inspiring creatives to help you grow your freelance career. All right, let's get into the episode. Welcome to the Closer and Closer podcast. I'm one of your hosts, Andrea Mejia Madriz, and I am a part of the artist marketing and partnerships team here at Closer and Closer. And I have back with me this week, thank the Lord, Dave Arcade.
Thank the Lord. Thanks, Andrea. That was
I missed you.
Well, that's great to hear. I don't know if there's any other Gen Zer on planet Earth that misses me right now except for you. So thanks, Andre. I'm Dave Arcade, an artist on the Closer and Closer roster, but enough about me because it is my pleasure to introduce today's guest. Neff Trejo is an award-winning graphic designer with 10 years experience working as a creative director, designer, art director, photographer, and director in the apparel, entertainment, consumer electronics, hospitality, and automotive industries. He is currently the associate creative director at Disney, quoted on his LinkedIn profile, "Perfectly crafted is my ultimate goal, no matter the medium, print, digital, experimental, broadcast film, you can bet my heart is in it." Welcome to the podcast, Neff Trejo.
Welcome in, Neff. It's so great to have you. I'm so excited. I think you're the first client that we've had on in a long time. I don't remember the last time that we interviewed a client or like a creative director. So I think it's going to be awesome to kind of pick your brain and get, you know, your perspective on things because we're typically talking artist to artist, so I'm very excited.
We had the guy from Tyson Chicken Patties on.
We did not.
Wow.
He made that
up. I'm kidding.
Oh, wow. I was like, okay. That's a tough act to follow.
Dave's just a big Tyson Chicken Patties fan.
Yeah, we were so stoked when we got the guy from Tyson Chicken Patties on. You don't even understand. No.
Yeah. The guy from Tyson Chicken. Great.
Yeah. Awesome. So we'll dive right into it. And as we talked about earlier, I was checking out your LinkedIn and I noticed, again, you had the opposite journey of a lot of our artists. You kind of went from freelancing and designing to creative direction. And I just kind of wanted to hear more about that journey. Like, where did your creativity start? How did you realize where your true talents and passions lay? Kind of how did you get to this point?
Yeah, thank you. I mean, I would try to keep it somewhat concise, but I think that my journey as a creative, as a visual creative, I would say, it started when I was in my band in like late 90s, early 2000s. And
what kind of band was this? You got to tell us about that.
This is a ska band.
Nice. My wife was in a ska band.
Yeah, so I was in a ska band. I sang and I played guitar in some songs. But it's so funny because I was like the sad ska guy. I wasn't necessarily a ska guy. If you're familiar with ska, it's very upbeat and happy.
Yeah.
It was not even like reggae, where it's kind of – reggae can be melancholy, you know, but ska is just straight happy.
Yeah.
But only major chords.
But the way I was writing was really sad. Everything was sad. You know, it was about breaking up and whatnot. But that just created a love for designing visuals for like a music, for bands, for my band in particular, right? And it's like one of my first gigs, it was more like, how do we get merch? Right.
Yeah.
How do we start selling t-shirts at our shows? And that I found a local screen print shop and like I was asking him for a deal and then, you know, he gave me a job, you know, and then I started designing t-shirts for like, I don't know if you guys are familiar, but like early 2000s, everybody wanted to have a clothing company. But really what a clothing company meant was, do you have t-shirts?
Yeah.
You know, I remember that. Which is probably not so different from now, you know, I think Supreme maybe kind of got their start that way as well. But all in all, music was kind of my way of like into design, into graphic design. Of course, you know, just cut to the end of this and my music career never went anywhere, you know? So
none of ours did.
So I stuck with graphic design and I went to school for it. The reason why it went from freelance to art direction to, you know, to creative direction was because I graduated in 2008, summer 2008, from Art Center. And I don't know if you
went to Art Center, Pasadena?
I went to Art Center in Pasadena, yeah.
You think you're better than me. I tried to get in there. I ended up going to the Art Institute in Orange County.
Oh, nice, nice.
Doesn't even exist anymore because they're a bunch of cheaters.
Oh, snap. All right, fire.
He's calling them out.
My degree doesn't matter anymore. They're not accredited.
Oh, really?
Yeah, they're the assholes. They're the people. I owed $70,000 to those guys. I paid it off. It's a whole thing.
Dude, no, but that sucks. If your degree is kind of worthless as far as academically, that does suck. That does suck because you do pay a lot of money for education.
Yes. Sorry, keep going, man. I'm derailing.
No worries. But yeah, no, I got rejected from Art Center the first time I applied. I applied for night school and I got rejected. But then my wife now, she's like, no, you should apply for the full full time or the regular. Mm-hmm. So I did, and then I got in. It was such nice. A weird quasi moment. But so I graduated in summer 2008, and if you guys remember, that was the recession, people were getting fired, not hired. So that you just got to make lemonade, right? I had recently gotten married. Student loans were knocking at the door already. Bills need to be paid. So I started freelancing. You know, I started, you know, picking up gigs wherever I could. And I had a friend who at that time, John Mayer was his one of his clients.
Oh, awesome.
Nice. And I kept bugging him. I kept pestering him. I was like, dude, let me do something for you. Let me do something with you, you know? And I think that he finally caved in and I got to do some posters and stuff like that. And I think he does my work. So I began to do more and more work with him. He had a few other artists, you know, that, you know, were part of his relationships or whatever. Like I think Sheryl Crow and a few other, you know, music people. but amongst that, that was like really, really hitting on my passion of music, right? I want to do stuff for music. I want to design for music. My aspirations at that moment were like, I want to design graphics for tours. I want to design t-shirts. Yeah. I want to design album packaging. I want to design posters. Like
that was the right time to do that stuff too.
Yeah.
Big posters so were huge at that time.
Super pumped. But at the same time, there was a shift, right? There was like the .com and all this stuff. And there was a lot of like, when Flash was huge, you know what I'm saying? And it's like, and I didn't learn how to do any Flash stuff, but what it did do to me was push me in a direction that I needed to be more digital minded. Mm-hmm. So instead of being so print minded, which I love tactile stuff, like I love posters. That's why I love David
Leutert.
Leutert?
Yeah.
He sent me some stuff. Like we had a preview with you guys and I love the stuff. Like I love grabbing stickers, you know, it's just that stuff, even the smell of print. But at that time, I had to make a shift and think more digitally. So I began to do more in digital work. And that just created a different skill, right, in my arsenal. And as that happened, I kept doing more and more work. But then I got hit up, like, really surprisingly. I was really surprised by this. Because I always thought I was going to be working at a design boutique, design shop, you know. And I got hit up by this creative director or design director at this advertising agency. And they're like, do you want to come freelance here for a while or whatever? And I was like, yeah. But it was for a car brand. It was for Lexus at that time. And I didn't know anything about cars. I wasn't a fan of Lexus as a car brand.
Sure.
But I guess my chops spoke for themselves.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And so I freelanced there for like a few months, I guess like a couple months or whatever. And I guess I, 2 seconds.
You accidentally got into advertising.
Yeah, exactly. Can you guys hear my dog? Or are you guys okay?
Oh, no, we're good. We're good. I thought it was the bear in the California Republic behind you that was barking.
Yeah, exactly. No.
What agency was this, by the way? I'm always curious.
So this
curious.
Is Team One.
Oh,
Team One.
Yeah, nice. I was at Y&R when Team One was huge, and I was like, I want to go to Team One. So
that's right. I read up that you went from like creative director to, you know, freelance artist. Yeah, that's awesome.
We got in at the same time. Like, I remember, we have a similar story, man. I'm just feeling everything you're saying.
You're vibing.
Yeah.
All right.
Yep.
Yeah. So then I got in there and it was so funny. I got into advertising. Like I said, I thought it was going to be boutique work, right? Like design shops. And yeah, then I became a car guy. I was there for like almost like 4 years. So I did a lot of photography. I was able to collaborate with a lot of photographers, directors. A lot of digital work, like I was telling you, it's like the digital work just kind of kept going. It was about 4 years that I was there at Team One and working on Lexus. I did touch like a few other accounts while I was there, but really Team One's bread and butter is Lexus. And so as I was kind of getting there more, and I don't want to say bored, but it's like, okay, it was kind of the same thing for about 4 years, you know? And I think that's a really long time for people in agencies. Then I got hit up by another agency, Deutsch, and they're like, hey, do you want to come work for Volkswagen? And again, I was like, oh, okay. I know how to work in cars. I know how to do sheet metal. And I know that market. And I love Volkswagen. I had like a lot of nostalgia. Like we had Beetles, we had buses, we had Vanagons, you know, in my childhood. So I was like, oh my gosh, this is like totally up my alley. I love Volkswagen. I love the iconography. I love the identity. I love so much about it. So I was like, this is amazing. So I went on to work at Deutsch, and I worked at Deutsch for about 3 years. And in those 3 years, like I told you, I had beyond drank the Kool-Aid. Like, they didn't even have to give me Kool-Aid. I was sold on VW.
Yeah.
And at that point, we were really pushing diesel. And I don't know if you guys remember the whole thing that happened with Volkswagen and diesel. They called it Dieselgate.
Sorry, y'all. We just had a quick technical difficulty, but Neff, I think you were just in the middle of telling us, you know, you were drinking the Kool-Aid at Volkswagen.
Yeah, so I drank the Kool-Aid, you know, I more than drank the Kool-Aid at Volkswagen. And I definitely had a nostalgia, you know, and like I mentioned, you know, I don't know how we're going to chop this up now because of the little hiccup that we just had. But there was definitely like already a family history behind it. So I was like, oh, this is the perfect brand for me. But around that time, I worked there for like about 3 years, and around that time, we were really pushing diesel.
Diesel. Oh, you're talking about Dieselgate.
Dieselgate. Yeah, I was talking about Dieselgate. And Dieselgate, like, man, it was, I'll tell you, it was probably one of the biggest kind of wake-up moments for me as far as my career goes, and knowing and understanding what you're putting your skills to, what you're using your superpowers to promote, to push, to sell. And like I was telling my cousin, you should buy a TDI. You should buy it. They get great gas mileage. And dude, it was when it finally hit and came out that Volkswagen was lying. It just felt crushing. It was like
that sucks.
Crushing thing. Cause you felt like you had blood yourself on your hands. So it put me in a place where I was really like looking at my hands like, bruh, like a bear, like what have I done? You know, though I wasn't doing it necessarily like consciously. I was in a space where I was like, what am I doing? You know what I'm saying? Like, and maybe in some ways I was questioning my career path. I was questioning what I was doing for a living. And in some ways, I didn't know what else to do necessarily. You know what I'm saying? It's like I don't know how to do this. The band obviously didn't make it, so I couldn't go back to music. So I was prime for like picking. Like anybody could just pick me off at that moment. Like if you mm-hmm. offer me a job, I'll be like, yeah, whatever. Whatever it is, I'll take it. I'll go work for Tyson Chicken. You know? and the thing was like one of my friends, he hit me up. You know, I was chatting with him and it's funny. He was I think he had just started at Disney and he was enjoying like the Disney life. He was like, mm-hmm. like, cause he's a director. So he was like, of course, experiencing like the cruises, the resorts and just, he was yeah. getting the grand tour and I was just like, oh, it's cool. And just look fun. You know yeah. what I'm saying? And I was just teasing him, you know, we had worked together at Deutsch and I had said, you know, yeah, dude, like, you know, you can tell I was just not necessarily disgruntled, but just unsatisfied. Mm-hmm. And he said that there was an opening at Disney. I never thought I would be working at Disney. I never thought my email address would end with Disney.com. I True. Never thought any of that. I didn't know who Yellow Shoes was.
Mm-hmm.
And like I said, I was ripe for picking.
Yeah.
Like, anybody can just grab me. And so I didn't know what I was getting into. I didn't know what I was going to be doing. I don't know what type of work, but I mean, it worked out. I'm yeah. super stoked. I'm on Disney now, as you know. And
what year is this, by the way? Did you join Disney?
2000. I think it's been like 3-4 years now. I think it's so weird with the pandemic. Those mm-hmm. 2 years are kind of weird, like null yeah. years.
It's like one long year for the last 3 years.
Yeah, totally. So it's like, I think I'm at 4 years, which is, again, is a long time.
But it's more, I'm coming like two. Up on
4 years.
Yeah.
But it feels like two. Yeah, yeah, exactly. It feels like 2 years, but because of the pandemic, it's just like, whoa, 4 years. So it's been about 4 years. And it's been super cool to just to work on a different brand. And one of the things that I said, and right now I'm building my team, and mm-hmm. I have a lot of interviews and some juniors and stuff, and they ask me, it's like, oh, what do you like about working at Disney? And how did you get into it? And of course, I spill a little bit of this history, but the thing that I appreciate working from Disney, like we're going from doing an account like Volkswagen to Disney, is that though Disney might be expensive, because mm-hmm. you know we have to say that, I don't think that it's the most affordable, you know, vacation. It delivers every time. Mm-hmm. If you can afford it, if you can pay the ticket, the moment you walk into, you know, those gates, like you feel it. Mm-hmm. You're like, wow, you're
well worth the money.
And so you're like, it's, I'm not lying to anybody.
Yeah.
Right. I don't feel like I'm lying. So that's where I'm okay with. And that's what I like about my job now, that I feel like, hey dude, I'm telling you, go buy a ticket to this event at Disneyland. And guess what? It's going to be awesome.
Yeah.
And it
you
will
believe
be awesome.
In what you're selling, which exactly. is amazing. That's the goal.
So
can I just say something on that real quick? Because it's the funniest thing and you'll appreciate it.
Yeah.
I mentioned I worked on Toshiba laptops. My my writing partner, Ronnie Lee, he was having trouble coming up with the right kind of tagline and language for the creative director, right?
Mm-hmm.
We've been like banging our head against the wall. And just talking about what you believe in selling. And mm-hmm. our CD, Craig Evans, great guy. He was like, Ronnie, You're dying in a ditch. What? There's one thing you could say about Toshiba before you freaking die. What is it? And he was like, buy a Mac.
Oh, wow.
And it was just such a great, it was hilarious, but it really made me realize what you're talking about is like, yeah, we can't come up with ideas for this brand because we know Mac is doing everything better. We didn't yeah. believe in it. We didn't believe in it, so we can come up with good work.
Yeah, no, it's exactly true. And I think that the moment you work on a brand you admire, I mean, like I was telling you, I felt like I was doing cool work and I was excited to work on Volkswagen until like I kind of got my heart broken about it.
Mm-hmm.
But when you believe in a brand, when you believe in a product, I think that it's fertile soil,
mm-hmm.
right, for ideas. It's fertile soil for collaboration. It's fertile soil for vision. You know,
mm-hmm.
But the moment you're having to, and there's a lot of people who are challengers who love like a real shitty brand.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. Can we curse on
this?
You're good.
Who love a shitty brand and then they make it their own and like, yeah, I fucking built that, you know, which is awesome, you know, and there are times that I like to do that. But for the most part, I think that it doesn't, it's not as much of a fuel for me.
Totally.
As it is for me to have a strong belief in what I'm selling.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's been great. I mean, Disney's a different company, and I'm a creative director now, and that shift has been really different. I think it's just the higher up you go, the more people-minded, people-centric you become, right? And less kind of like craft-centric. But totally. I think at my heart, because I did get my start as a graphic designer, craft and visually like dialed in things, you know what I'm saying? Like speak to my heart. And
yeah,
like I feel just like, you know, super serene when I see something really nice.
That's cool. Yeah. When I got promoted to associate creative director, I remember my CD said, your whole career, people have been reaching down to pull you up. Now, no one's going to do that anymore. You're alone. You can only fall, and it's your turn to reach down and pull people up. And I was like, I don't want to do that. and the work went away too. But you're at Disney. This is like an ad agency that had brands where I was like, I didn't care that much about them. You're working on cool stuff, so it's a little easier. But you're totally right. It's people centric is my point.
Yeah, no, you're right. I think that at an ad agency, it's a little faster paced, and there is a little bit more of a. It's just a different, you know, a different
culture.
Environment in general, culture, totally. From an agency side to an internal agency side or partner side or client side.
It sounds like you like it, right? Like you,
I do like it. I think that there's sometimes that I fiend for other things, right? Of course, like anything else, right? And I think as creatives, we're always kind of like, oh man, I want to do something new, right? And I think that ties into one of your other questions that I kind of like saw. But I think that for the most part, I think that especially for doing stuff that you are going to get paid for, it's good for you to believe in it, you know?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
But Disney, like you were saying, Dave, it's like, you're kind of solo cello at the top, the higher up you go, you know, probably like in an agency, and it's like, yeah, no one's going to pull you up kind of thing. But I feel like at Disney, because it's corporate, you know, and maybe that's a dirty word, but there is like a higher management. It keeps going up. There's a lot more layers, right? Like I'm still kind of like a little tadpole in the big pond, you know? So there's still a lot of people that pour into me, you know, they pull me up, you know, and say they still nurture me. And I think Disney as a brand
that's cool.
A little bit more people centric. So, which is good.
Yeah,
that is good, man. I love that. I always like to know like what building people work at. I've worked with like Nickelodeon and Disney, and I just, if you would ask me like 10 years ago where everyone at Nickelodeon works, I'd be like, it's the Nickelodeon building. But it's like, no, the animators work at the Nickelodeon animation building. And then they're, so are you at Disney Animation Studios?
No, Disney's massive. Just the same thing we were just talking about. Disney's massive. I'm like I said, I'm a tadpole. But Disney Burbank, and you've seen it, the Disney animation, you see the big hat, right, when you're on the five. But it spans from Burbank, which is like all the way up the north where you see that little hat. And then there's the Walt Disney kind of offices, the corporate offices are like up there. But it goes all the way down the five. If you keep going down the five, there's more real estate that Disney owns. Wow. So my particular...
I love the five, by the way.
my office that I'm based at, that I haven't been back to in like 2 years, is in Glendale. And it's kind of where the... it's the five and the 134. Kind of meet up around there. Yep. So think about that. So Disney literally has like a shuttle that goes all the way to Burbank, all the way to the top to the bottom down there.
That is wild, man. I mean, it is Disney.
Yeah, it is Disney, right? They own the It's on Grand Central. That's where the office is. And yeah. if you Google it, that's like Disney Creative Campus. And there's a lot of Imagineering there. There's a lot of consumer products there. So that's where I am. So I'm in Glendale, but dude, that's just like a massive.
Yeah,
it is helpful. It is helpful for our listeners and also like freelancers. It's just like just to place people, you know, it's like, oh, I'm going to be working with Disney. When you hear that, you're like, does that mean, and then it gets mixed in with Pixar. And it's like, does that mean the person talking to me is off, like the next office over is Ed Catmull? It's like, no, like there's totally different campuses and departments and, people like, that handle things.
The thing is that there is some Marvel people that are like within that Disney Creative Campus. There's consumer products. There's a lot of corporate offices around there. You know what I'm saying? So, but there's a huge, well, there was, or there is a lot of Imagineering people within that campus. So, and those guys are geniuses.
The one thing I appreciate about Disney is they hire freaking quality people, man. Like it's no joke. You get hired at Disney, it's not a fluke. They're like, I don't know, we just hired this guy. It's like, no, that person belongs here. I've worked with Pixar, the Pixar team. I actually have a mural at the Disney Animation Studio on the.
Oh, really?
If you ever go down there and you go to the there's a part for employees to hang out and playing ping pong. It's a black and white mural of
right up my alley.
Disney. Yeah, dude, you might really like it. It was hard. The creative direction was. Rip off Macbeth. And I was like, I don't want to rip off Macbeth. Like, he's my favorite illustrator. But I kind of did. That's why it's not in my portfolio. I'm really proud of the piece, but it's just not my style. But
right.
I love that mural. You know what? After this, I'll send it to you. You'll like it.
Yeah, hook me up. Send me some details.
Yeah, man. Why was I bringing this up? I totally forgot what I was talking about because I started talking about me.
Okay. No worries. No, but I dig it. I do want to see that mural, though, by the way.
Maybe it was about the mural. Okay, we'll just transition back. We actually have some questions for you.
No, you were talking about it, it's good for people to kind of locate themselves or like orient themselves when they're the quality of employees and kind of knowing kind of where the campus is and that the Pixar guy is not right next to the Marvel guy and he's not next door. But and I do agree with that, and I think that's one of the things. I got a funny story. So I did, and if you don't mind me just talking about it,
no, go for it.
And it's a little bit of a nerd thing, but Pixar does this thing where I don't know if they do it all the time, but I mean I've experienced it once, maybe twice. I don't know if I remember, but I want to put it on my LinkedIn. So they stand up and clap after you present.
Oh, wow.
And I don't know if it's like, even if you suck, they stand up and clap. But I mean, I thought we nailed it. You know, when you present, you're like, that was fucking good, dude. You know, you fucking nailed it. And then they're like, the affirmation that I felt from like I did this project for Plaza de la Familia, which is like the stop motion video.
It's very cool. I saw that.
And when we presented the boards and the story and like, they stood up and clapped. And
that is wild.
This is over the video, right? And I was like, oh my gosh, I'm looking around the room. Did you guys see this? You know, it's like, so it was such a moment. It was such a great, great moment.
That is so funny. Yeah,
so I got to put it on my LinkedIn. It's like,
oh, absolutely. You do it.
They stood up, Pixar stood up and, you know,
standing ovation from the Pixar team.
Well, yeah, exactly.
Like you present, I mean, you did a presentation yesterday, Andrea. Like, imagine if we were like after it was done. I love that.
I mean, feel great about
myself.
Stand up
and just clap. No, literally, like on video call, and they stood up. Like we're just looking at amazing. A meeting room, and they stood up and clapped. And it was
quality
like,
people, man.
Quality of people.
But Stacy on the Disney team, if you're out there, she hired me for a job last year, and holy smokes, man, that team was incredible to work with. Like,
is that they consumer were products?
Yeah, it was for a merchandise program for Frozen, and I was like, why are you hitting me up for Frozen? Products, I'm chainsaw and jetpack guy. And they're like, trust me, first off, my first mistake was assuming they weren't doing their research. Like, no, we want you because we want to bring out all the boyish stuff that's in Frozen, like the monsters and the wolves. And I was like, cool, yeah. And the dude who plays the guitar, they were just a pleasure to work with. It's probably my best. It was my best client experience I've ever had. And the thing is I've heard, and Disney, anyone at Disney is listening to this because your guy is being interviewed by us. I've heard prior to that, not by Closer and Closer, just in the wind, like, oh, Disney's really tough to work with. So I was a little nervous. I did that mural, but that was like in a bubble for the studio, that it was a different thing. So I was a little nervous, and wherever I learned that, that couldn't have been more wrong. Like, it was a freaking pleasure, man. So,
yeah.
And you could take credit for it. You were just be like, thanks, Dave. That was me. That was all me.
You know what it is? I think that it does. Like I was telling you, when I came over to Disney, I didn't know what to expect. But you see Disney, you know, you've known Disney since your childhood, and you do think like, oh my gosh. And there is some pretty strong boundaries that Disney holds. And I think that because Disney, I think at the core, Disney is storytelling. And they are guardians of these stories and of these characters and of these IPs. So there is a lot of crossing the T's, dotting the I's that needs to be done in order for their characters to stay consistent and true. So even if you're doing a reinterpretation of a character, there's a panel of people that need to be like, yes, that is an okay interpretation. You know what I'm saying? Of a Disney character, of a Disney IP. So, and even storylines, right? Like even within that, the campaigns that we work in, they need to work within their worlds. Like Mickey can't necessarily shake hands with Darth Vader. You know what I'm saying?
Because
they can't, because Star Wars never necessarily comes to Earth. You know what I'm saying? So there's that. That's why you go into another galaxy, you know, when you go to, you know, Star Wars land, you know, Galaxy's Edge. So there is a lot of boundaries, but I think that those solid boundaries create really good sandboxes for creatives.
Absolutely.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. Yeah. That's a perfect segue into my question. Like how do you guys toe that line between established worlds and the established art direction, and then letting an artist kind of do their thing so that their vision's getting in there and you're getting your money's worth out of them? Like, what guidelines do you guys follow to make sure that those things, that the artist vision, but the guidelines are followed and then harmonized for a final product?
So before a project even gets to, like, you know, a collaborator, you know, and I'm calling photographers collaborators, directors collaborators, illustrators, you know, typographers, artists, before we get to that point, the project has been thoroughly revised and advised and revised and, you know what I'm saying?
Just thought through, like totally briefed.
Yeah, it's gone through a bunch of gauntlets, right?
That makes sense,
to have the core of the idea, like the nugget. Mm. Once you get to that point, and as an art director, you know, they would be having in mind, and they would be grabbing scrap, right, of kind of how this project, this story, this whatever the medium they're working on, what it might look like, right? So the type of illustration, the type of craft. So there's already kind of this vision that this art director is kind of putting together. So by the time that there are creative calls being made with an illustrator, you know, photographer or director, there's already a nugget of an idea, you know, and a pretty solid nugget that everybody on the Disney side is on board. So now what we're looking to do is to bring a collaborator, you know, like a Closer and Closer to illustrator, a Closer and Closer typographer, to bring that to life. Right.
Nice.
And what's really cool to see is that, like I said, the art director has been on this journey for a long time before, you know, they approached and, you know, the collaborating artist. So this new artist brings a new fresh perspective, but this new artist was already chosen for a reason. So like your experience, Dave, you said, oh, I'm not a Frozen guy. No, but you don't understand that the art director, that the team has already a concept in mind, and they already know what they want to push, right? They want to push the more of the masculine side of Frozen. So let's look for a masculine, you know, artist. You know, they kind of will bring that to life. So that's kind of, we're like, no, Dave, like, we seen your stuff.
Yeah.
And we actually, that's why we want you.
You know, we're smart. Like, we know what we're doing.
Yes and no. You know, yes, they're smart people. But at the same time, it's not so hard to make that leap, right? Mm-hmm. That's why portfolios are so good. And it's kind of tricky because sometimes you want to take a bet on somebody that doesn't have what you're looking for in their book. But most of the time, what you have in your book is what
you're going to get.
What sells me, what gives me the confidence to entrust you, mm-hmm. right? Like, I was on a panel for photographers a while back, and they asked me, you know, how do you get gigs and stuff like that? And, you know, what about creative calls and what's the best thing to get the gig, to land the gig after like a creative call? And what I just kind of, I had mentioned to them, it's like, if you think about this, this art director, this creative team has been with this project for, you know, months, you know, and now they're entrusting this baby to you. Mm-hmm. So if you're not stoked, like, think about it. If I bring in my baby and you think my baby's ugly or make a face or I don't like the vibe that you're getting me, you know, giving me when I show you my baby, then I'm not going to entrust my baby to you.
Totally. Now, if I remember those feelings. Directors, and you're just like, dude, I can tell you're not stoked about this.
Exactly. You know what I'm saying? But like, even though I looked at your book, Dave, and you're exactly what I want, but your attitude and your vibe, you're not, it doesn't spark joy, you know,
exactly.
for you, obviously, you know? So it's in that sense that that's where the collaboration begins. And that's what begins to grease the wheels. Right. Mm-hmm. For that communication between artist and art director.
Yeah. And I think that word of trust is like so key because you said that a couple of times. And I think just having that tidbit of knowledge that like that art director, that creative director is coming to you because they trust you already. Because I feel like that tends to happen with artists is like, you know, they're like, oh, they're putting me in this box and like they want me to do this thing and they're not letting me do my thing. But it's because they trust you to do what they already know that you can do. And then the artist has to come back and like trust that the creative director did their due diligence and like knows what they want. I think like that piece of trust is so important for artists to have in mind when they're going into a project, because, you know, it's not like a creative director against artist type of thing. Like it's not, you know, coming head to head. It's, you know, you're both trusting each other with your vision and with your style and with your voice and saying like, no, you are the person that I want to work with.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
There are. Yeah, that's a really nice slice of a larger insight, which is that moment where and it's usually the artist makes this paranoid judgment in their mind where they're like, well, they're just trying to hire somebody to get this done, and they think I'm the guy to do it. It's like, no, they never said that. They'll never say that. Do your thing within the box. Like that's a lot. There's a lot of room. And I mean that the Frozen project was so freaking fun. Like if you go on my Instagram and I posted it like last week, you'll see that was a guy having a good time, like a grown man having a good time drawing pictures about Frozen. And so, yeah, I'm just saying, Andre, that's a good insight. Like never for illustrators and designers and anyone listening who's a freelancer, never follow that, drink that paranoid Kool-Aid. Like they're hiring you because they want you to do something awesome for them.
Well, they're already fans.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah,
they're already fans of your work.
Yeah.
Totally.
Exactly.
I think that's amazing. And kind of going off of this, like building trust and working with, you know, freelancers or outside collaborators, you know, you've worked with some of our artists in the past, your team has, they're always so excited about the Disney projects that they get. Disney is basically every artist's dream client. Like everyone loves Disney, right? That's not a hard thing. What are some of your favorite parts of working with a freelance artist? And, you know, what parts of that process really excite you? And yeah, just like what kind of artists end up being your favorite? Like what are those things that really stand out to you when working with, you know, a photographer, illustrator, whatever it may be?
I think that I hit on it a little bit briefly, but it is that fresh pair of eyes.
Mm-hmm.
It comes into a project that like I said, you've been and by you, I mean like the art director, the creative director, the agency side of things, you know what I'm saying, have been with this project for months, if not years, you know, and at that point, I mean, if you think about it, you get like a little bit of tunnel vision, you get a little bit of like, yeah, that's what we said we were going to do, paper craft, you know, and it's like, my mood board's like, whatever, months old. And so you kind of get a little passe about it. But the moment you find the right partner, the right artist, you know, to bring that vision to life, they inject like fresh blood. It's like putting in a new guy, you know, on the field, got fresh legs, you know what I'm saying? And that's one of the things that I love, because it's almost like they take, it's like Mario, right? It's like, you got a mushroom, you know, and then all of a sudden your idea is like that much bigger and that much stronger. I think that it's funny because like in experience of like, and this was for the Plaza de la Familia project that I did, you know, for like, and then that project, it's funny because that relationship, we work with this agency called Lobo, and the art director was Guillermo, and we briefed that project, like I told you, you know, we had written the script and stuff like that, but when we briefed, we were at that point, it was so early, this is what's so crazy, and this is what will set somebody apart sometimes. We briefed this project, and usually we brief it with like, hey, here's a rough script, here's a rough kind of thought of what we have, you know, and then we send it out to three different companies, and Lobo came back with us with the full treatment. It's like, dude, this is where we see your project going. This is the way we see the characters. And they started sketching.
Yeah.
And in their treatment, Luis saw sketches, and guess what? It's exactly what I just told you. That's fresh legs. Those are, that's fresh blood. That's a fresh take on the project. And I mean, at that point, it's not hard to sell one, a person, a partner, you know, like an artist, a Lobo, to sell them when you see how passionate and how much they want to be part of this project. And two, that their work is really awesome and they already get it. And three, they love your fucking baby.
You know what I'm saying? They think it's
like, they don't think your baby is ugly. You know what I'm saying? So it's just like, it's a win-win in that sense. So that's what's really cool about selecting. And even when you're, you know, bidding people or trying to, hey, let's find out these three different artists and see which one's stoked on it. You know, no three artists are alike. You know what I'm saying? But you will get the hungry ones, you know, who are actually wanting to work with you and who are stoked about the project that you're talking about. And they just kind of bring a fresh perspective on what you're working on.
You're not client side, but you are because you work for a brand. So don't take that as an offense. But to hear the client side of this, specific to this, I used to work for this ad agency, and the creative director there, I brought him up on the podcast before. He's one of my mentors. His name's Brent Watts. But I need to talk into the mic. Well, I'm like over here.
You're hiding.
He would always get in trouble with the executive team because you would have the creative team make sketches and fully think through this thing before it was, before we were going to get paid. But his whole point was, if I don't do this, then the client side, freaking the nefs of the world are going to think that we think their baby's ugly. And so it's really nice to hear from this side, some confirmation as to why that stuff's important. So just keep that in mind. Like, I keep going back to the listeners, the one person who's like this is like, what are they saying? But keep that in mind. If you haven't been hired yet, but you're bidding something out, like the more you put in, like you just heard it from the horse's mouth. Like you're more likely to get the job if you show your enthusiasm. And I'm a big believer in that. And there were many meetings struck that I used to work for that betrayed me and laid me off, but let me become a freelancer, which is the best thing that's ever happened to me. There are many meetings where there's like, frickin' Brent, again, going out there and pitching work and having you guys do a bunch of work we're not getting paid for. I'm like, yeah, but that's why we get those jobs.
Yeah, no, exactly. Yeah, that is an edge.
Yes.
Yeah, absolutely.
I just hope somebody from Struck hears this, because I've been wanting to say that for a long time. Sons of bitches.
Dave oversharing as he does.
That's great.
Hey, pay no mind.
Oversharing is that I say it's soulful. It comes from the soul.
Okay. I didn't say it was a bad thing.
You just said, Dave, that's a bad thing you're doing. We both heard you. We both heard you. No, sorry. Go for it, Andre.
No, I want you to take it away with your last question because, like I said, you know, we're getting close to time and I think this one's a fun one and really interesting and very NEF specific. So,
yeah. So, you know, you and I have had, like, it's funny because we've had these opposite journeys. You started freelance and then you went into Crave Direction. I started as an art director, went to Crave Direction and went freelance. And I bring this up because I remember those days really loving, I was loving the work I was doing, but like going home and working on the archive of bizarre weapons, you know, which was a real project of mine, which was just like a shark gun and stuff. I was like, oh, this is just fun stuff I get to do. Yeah. So what, you know, some advice for ADs out there or anybody who has skills like you, because you're a designer. Are you an illustrator, by the way? Like what's...
No, I suck at that, dude. Don't
are you a designer?
I'm a graphic designer at heart, right? Like
that's what I am.
That's what's in my heart. You know, so I always look at craft.
Right on. So you're a man after my heart. A graphic designer who went into art direction. That's exactly my path. And so, for folks out there who are kind of in the same boat, what advice do you have for the importance of personal work? Because you've been down that road. I mean, it saved you at the beginning of your career.
It's so interesting. I think personal work, it's a trip because maybe I'm a little bit of an oddball in the sense that I like a lot of stuff. Like I love photography. Mm-hmm. And I got into photography really early in my life. Like when I was shooting my friend's skateboarding, I was shooting bands, I was shooting things like that. But I never wanted that to be my breadwinning gig because I don't want people to tell me what to shoot. I guess I didn't mind people telling me what to do for graphic design, right? I mean, that's like the graphic design is a workhorse. It needs to do work.
Yeah.
But photography was really close to my heart. So I still love photography. And as far as like personal things, that's what I do. If you look at my Instagram, it's all black and white because that's how I got into photography, you know, and stuff like that. But I think as far as personal projects and like personal creative fulfillment, it's interesting enough, my wife, I love her so much. She's like such a supportive human being for me. And I think at times we just get talking about like, oh man, I want to do this. Oh man, I want to do that. And we're talking about like a lot of different things, not just design, but we're talking about, I want to design a chair. I want to design clothing. Like I want to design an actual t-shirt. I want to design an actual pair of pants or shirt. I want to design shoes. You know what I'm saying? Whatever. I mean, it just, and maybe it is design at the core of kind of these creative endeavors, personal creative endeavors. So, like, it's so funny. The pandemic just really ruins timelines. But so maybe around 2020, 2019, we were talking about, oh, yeah, you're looking
at good grief, dude. You almost have 100,000 followers on Instagram, by the way.
Yeah. It's been going down a little bit just because I don't post as much, you know. Thank you. But my wife really encouraged me to start this thing. And we started this thing called Malas Amistades. And Malas Amistades means bad friendships. And the basis for Malas Amistades was to create a sandbox for us, you know, me and my wife, to collaborate with friends. You know what I'm saying? And like, it's like, okay, if I hang out with Dave, what kind of shit do I get into? You know what I'm saying? If I hang out with Andrea, you know, what kind of shit do I get into? It's very different shit that we get into. You know what I'm saying?
I love that.
With every different friend. So it's just like, what kind of trouble can we get into with different types of people? And what kind of stuff can we create with different people, right? In that sense, we created Malas Amistades as a platform for us to venture out into things that we would never think about. Like we want to make a wine. So we have some thoughts with some friends about like, hey, how can we make our own wine? You know what I'm saying? How can we create our own mezcal? You know, how can we create our own clothing? And we started the thing literally in 2020, and we created this t-shirt. So if you go to malasamistades.co, you'll see, and the website's still up, but we're kind of done with that project. We created some t-shirts, Good Trouble t-shirts, and we donated some money to the ACLU. And but that was our venture into that. That was like our dipping our toe into that. Mm-hmm. And I think there is a necessity and a need for us as creatives, and regardless if you're an art director or whoever you are, you know, because we're all commercial, you know, artists, mm-hmm. To have those personal creative endeavors, right? Where you flex other muscles, where you have no one else telling you if it's right or wrong, or what the budget is, or what the timeline is, you know what I'm saying? That you are enjoying it yourself, because when you're doing it for the money, it's always so stifling and your wings are always kind of tight. You never get to quite flex them all the way. So I think it's important to have those things.
Love it.
It's a dude. I didn't expect that to come out when I asked you this question. I just had a hunch, you know, like I need to ask this guy about this. And you have a lot to say on this. Like what is the name, the meaning of the name of the thing you started? So they say the name is
Friendships.
It's malas.
Malas.
Amistades. Malas amistades. I mean, it translates to bad friendships.
Bad friendships.
Bad friendships. But, you know,
in a good way.
Probably the heartfelt meaning is bad influences.
Mm-hmm. To see the shape that you're going to get into with somebody else, basically, which exactly. I love. Yeah. That's such a cool way to look at collaboration. And I think we live in a time where collaboration is so easy, and you get a lot of people who do it, but I don't think that the time of collaboration has quite come, but it is, the wave is there. Mm-hmm. And I know it's like, what do you mean, Dave? Like freaking Steve Jobs and Woz, I don't know his real name. That was a collaboration. Yes. Mick Jagger and freaking Keith Richards. I know there's collaborations, but this is the time to collaborate. Even COVID, like, absolutely, has been a catalyst for that. Right. Mm-hmm. You have such a fresh take on this. I'm really into this idea, by the way, of collaborating, and the way that you look at it is so cool, because I do treat it like it's this, I don't know, there's some tenseness there, mm-hmm. but I'm maybe too precious with it. And I love your view on, like, don't be precious with it. What kind of shit can you get into with somebody else? Be loose with it. Start talking to people, just, and maybe it never goes anywhere, but like, at least you open up the conversation with your buddy.
Yeah, exactly. Like, maybe I learned how to make a wine bottle. Maybe I never make it, but maybe I learned how to make wine.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, I think it's in that sense, it's about the journey.
Yeah.
Right? Even if we never make it, hey, I got to work with a pattern maker for some clothes.
Yeah, totally. And you're a guy who's building up your arsenal, aren't you?
maybe. I hope so.
Yeah. Awesome. That's cool. I love that.
Yeah, I really do love that. Because also, I think something that tends to be difficult for freelancers, especially, is to initiate that work, you know, and like, because always, like with the commercial artists and commercial freelancers, it's you're always working towards an end. And like, especially because you're marketing yourself and like, you're doing your whole career of like being a freelancer on top of being an artist, everything always is a means to an end. So like, the personal work is just something to post on your Instagram because you need to post this week because nobody's seeing your work and whatever. And I think the approach that you take is so refreshing and lovely because it allows you to like get to whatever stage of the process and just enjoy the process for what it is, which I think is difficult for freelancers. So I think everybody should take a page out of that book.
Absolutely.
Awesome. Cool. Well, I want to wrap things up so we have a couple minutes at the end to chat. But Neff, first of all, thank you so much for being here. This was so fun.
Thank you.
And I just want you to round it out by telling us where the people can find you, if that's something that you want. If you don't want them to find you, don't need to tell us anything.
I'm not. I don't think my Instagram is private, but my Instagram is definitely a place that you can hit me up. Even if you want to send me something, I think I would see it there. Of course, LinkedIn. You know, I think everybody's on LinkedIn. But those probably the places. I mean, if you want to check out some of my work, it's neftrejo.com. Just straight up good old .com with my name on it.
Lucky you.
Yeah. It's funny. It's like, what was Drew Melton's? I've been Drew's friend for a while.
Right on.
But what was his first URL? It's like, I'm just lucky or just lucky here.
Oh, that's so funny.
It was
it was like aspiring. I don't remember what it was, but it's funny. You're lucky, you know. But yeah, that was Drew's one of his first.
JustADreamer.com.
And then look at him now. His empire is huge.
He did. Yeah.
No, but this is so funny. Yeah,
he's killed somebody. Did you know that?
Dave likes to spread rumors on the pod.
I do. That's, I do. I spread rumors that Andre sells drugs or something, that Drew's killed somebody.
You know, but the thing is that he probably would get away with it just because he has such a cute face.
I know.
He's got this.
And Drew could be a cult leader.
Drew, you're probably going to listen to this, but he's got this kind of precious moment face. It's very soft, very non-threatening. You know what I'm saying? So it's just like,
And he's so charismatic. He could literally be a cult leader. He always says this too.
He could be a cult leader.
He could be a cult leader, yes, because he's got a precious moments face.
Precious moments face is so good, dude.
He's very cute. He's very cute. And his baby is, super, super cute. Like,
Yeah, yeah.
But anyways.
Oh my God.
You can't give away a cult leader's baby's name? Are you crazy?
Okay. I'm going to wrap this up so that we don't slander Drew and
Her name's Tandy.
Candy.
But thank you so
Candy
much.
Candy Melton.
Yes.
Thank you so much, Neff. This was amazing.
Thank you.
This was fun, Neff. Thank you, man.
Maybe we'll have you back on the pod just so that you can spill tea about early days, Drew.
Okay. Yes. No, I will. I got some shit for you.
Thank you.
All right. Thanks, Steve. Ciao.
Thanks for tuning in to the Closer and Closer podcast. Don't forget to subscribe and leave a review to receive the latest episodes. You don't want to miss some of the incredible conversations that we have coming up. They'll be full of powerful insight to help you reach your full creative potential. To find out more about us, visit www.closerandcloser.co.
But wait, before you go, we've got something super special for those of you looking for more opportunities to grow your creative career. Head to the show description and join the community, an interactive space to share information, gather resources, and build relationships with other creatives and us here at CNC.